door.
"What is it?"
she asked sleepily. "Brunanbuhr," Finnan said grimly. Edith made the sign of the cross. I had a glimpse of her naked body as her hand slipped from beneath the cloak to touch her forehead. Then she clutched the heavy woolen cloth tight to her belly again. "Loki." I spoke the name aloud. "He is the god of fire, whatever the Christians might tell you. And Loki is the most slippery of all the gods, a trickster who deceives, charms, betrays, and hurts us. Fire is his two-edged weapon that can warm us, cook for us, scorch us, or kill us." I touched Thor's hammer that hung from my neck. "Ethel stands there," I said. "If he lives," Finnan said. There was nothing to be done in the darkness. The journey to Brunanbuhr took at least 2 hours on horseback, and would take longer in this dark night, when we would be stumbling through woods and possibly riding into an ambush set by the men who had fired the distant burr. All I could do was watch from Chester's walls, in case an attack burst from the dawn. I did not fear such an attack. Chester had been built by the Romans, and it was as tough a fortress as any in Britain. The Northmen would need to cross a flooded ditch and put ladders against the high stone walls, and Northmen have ever been reluctant to attack fortresses. But Brunanbuhr was aflame, so who knew what unlikely things the dawn might bring? Brunanbuhr was our newest burr, built by Æthelflæd, who ruled over Mercia, and it guarded the River Mersey, which offered the Northmen's boats an easy route into central Britain. In years past, the Mersey had been busy, the oars dipping and pulling, and the dragon-headed boats surging against the river's current to bring new warriors to the unending struggle between the Northmen and the Saxons. But Brunanbuhr had stopped that traffic. We kept a fleet of 12 ships there, their crews protected by Brunanbuhr's thick timber walls, and the Northmen had learned to fear those ships. Now, if they landed on Britain's west coast, they went to Wales, or else to Cumberland, which was the fierce, wild country north of the Mersey. Except tonight. Tonight, there were flames by the Mersey. "Get dressed," I told Edith. There would be no more sleep this night. She touched the emerald-encrusted cross at her neck.
"Æthelstan,"
she said softly, as if she prayed for him while fingering the cross. She had become fond of Æthelstan. "He either lives or is dead," I said curtly, "and we won't know till the dawn." We rode just before the dawn, rode north in the wolf light, following the paved road through the shadowed cemetery of Roman dead. I took 60 men, all mounted on fast, light horses, so that if we ran into an army of howling Northmen, we could flee. I sent scouts ahead, but we were in a hurry, so there was no time for our normal precaution, which was to wait for the scouts' reports before we rode on. Our warning this time would be the death of the scouts. We left the Roman road to follow the track we had made through the woods. Cloud had come from the west, and a drizzle was falling, but still the smoke rose ahead of us. Rain might extinguish Loki's fire, but not drizzle, and the smoke mocked and beckoned us. Then we came from the woods to where the fields turned into mudflats, and the mudflats merged with the river, and there, far to our west on that wide stretch of silver-grey water, was a fleet. 20, 30 ships, maybe more. It was impossible to tell because they were moored so close together, but even from far away I could see that their prows were decorated with the Northmen's beasts, with eagles, dragons, serpents and wolves.
"Sweet God,"
Finnan said, appalled. We hurried now, following a cattle track that meandered along higher ground on the river's southern bank. The wind was in our faces, gusting suddenly to send ripples scurrying across the Mersey. We still could not see Brunanbuhr.